areas and are very dangerous, but in the long run, I'm really hopeful that there will be a different kind of life for both Jews and Arabs between the river and the sea under a democratic, free Palestine.
Ilan Pappe, professor of history and director of the European Center for Palestine Studies at the University of Exeter. Happy belated birthday to Samin Farkanday and today to Tay-Marie Astudio. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
There's no one-size-fits-all puberty experience. If you're trans, intersex, or non-binary, know that you're not the only one feeling confused. For some intersex people, puberty may start later than age 14. You might experience some of puberty's changes and not others, and your body may or may not go through puberty on its own. There are medicines you can take to help your body start the process, like hormone replacement therapy. Some people decide on hormones or surgeries to help their bodies match up to their gender identity, or how they feel inside about themselves. Your gender identity is real. You should be the one to decide what changes you want to make to your body. If you're transgender or non-binary, you may find that your puberty experiences don't line up with your gender identity or how you see yourself. That feeling can be uncomfortable, scary, and stressful. If that sounds like you, know that you're not alone. There are medicines you can take to delay puberty for a while. They're called puberty blockers, and they work like a stop sign by halting the hormones testosterone and estrogen that cause puberty changes like facial hair growth and periods. Puberty blockers are safe and can give you more time to figure out what feels right for you, your body, and your gender identity. You don't have to have all of the answers right now. So remember, it's all a work in progress, and it may take time to figure out what feels right to you, but talking to a trusted adult and a nurse or doctor may help. Want to learn more? Go to PlannedParenthood.org/teens.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Starnberg, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, as well as over the internet on WUSB.FM. It's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday, time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, as it turns out.
Yes. Sometimes you just want to let the theme play. It's one of those days.
Oh, I absolutely really. I'm so fried and just like frantic, working like just nose to the grindstone. And I don't know what way is up or down or what. Like, I'm just totally out of tune. But how are you?
Oh, you noticed. I've been better. Let's put it that way. I did something. No, it wasn't a stupid thing. It was ill-timed because I'm in the middle of so many things. And I thought, hey, this would be a good time to get that second shingles shot, which is hard to say. Second shingles shot. Shingles is something that you want on your roof. You don't want it in your body. Different kind of shingles, but it's not fun. As you get older, you're more prone to developing it. And it's a two-part vaccination that you get. Now, I got the first part. Actually, I got the first part many years ago and then completely forgot about it. So eventually, I just had to start over again and get the first one last fall. It was part of that triple play deal that they had for the vaccines. I got COVID, I got flu, and I got shingles part one. It's great, great, great deal. A lot of fun. And now it was time, more or less time to get the second one, and I got it yesterday. And my arm is really, really hurting a lot, and should have timed better. Didn't think it through. I should have done this next week when I have less on my plate.
Well, arm notwithstanding, it's good to have you on the air.
Yeah, yeah. And on some Tylenols as well.
What's on your mind?
How do I say this? To coin a phrase, we are screwed. Wow, I like how the theme is over, and that just resonates. Yes, we are screwed, Kyle. We are screwed, folks. We are completely screwed because I'm looking at this story that I just actually saw from the New York Times. Okay, you're familiar with Roe versus Wade, right? The landmark case that basically protected abortion rights that Trump completely dismantled with his stolen Supreme Court and all that. You've heard of it, right, Kyle?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the scenario.
Did you know 17% of voters blame Biden for the end of Roe versus Wade? I'll say it again. 17%. Nearly a fifth of voters out there blame President Biden for the end of Roe versus Wade. You know, you cannot get more black and white than that. The president who stands up for a woman's right to choose and the president who did not respect that and dismantled that right so that women today have less rights than they had 50 years ago. Yeah. So, if 17% of the voters can't even get that right, they can't even realize who is on what side, and they just want to blame Biden for literally everything. How do you survive that? How do you get past that? How do you possibly reach people who are so uninformed that they actually believe this? I mean, what can you not blame Biden for? You know, virtually anything. Is his fault then? If Roe versus Wade being dismantled is Biden's fault, according to 17% of voters, and this is nearly 1 in 5 in battleground states. Yeah, those are the states that get to decide the entire election because our votes don't really count. But they're still important because, you know, you got to vote downstream as well, the local people, you know, stop the nightmares from happening in your communities. But yeah, 1 in 5 voters in battleground states say Biden is responsible for ending the constitutional right to abortion, according to a new poll, despite the fact that he supports abortion rights and that his opponent, Donald Trump, appointed 3 Supreme Court justices who made it possible to overturn Roe versus Wade. Yeah, you know, at some point, luck has to change because it just seems like everything goes against the Democrats at some point. Trump gets to appoint 3 Supreme Court justices. How many has Biden appointed? 0. Not a single one. You know, and imagine the changes that could be made to protect our democracy with some, a non-fascist, non-corrupt Supreme Court justices appointed for a change. Yeah. So yeah, that's what I read in the paper.
Certainly some progress needs to be made as far as evaluating if that's the true course for all of us.
Well, we need to, I don't know. I don't know what the solution is. We need to get the word out. We need to educate people. I don't know if it's possible to educate people who are that uninformed, you know, who think Biden is responsible for the end of Roe versus Wade. It's just that I'm just bowled over by that. All right, let's move into something a little bit more positive. Congestion pricing in Manhattan. That's one of my favorite topics to talk about. Yeah, not what they're saying, and this is kind of weird. Parking is going to become more scarce, at least initially, in those Manhattan neighborhoods that are north of 60th Street, because the zone is everything south of 60th Street in Manhattan. So what they think is going to happen is that people, in order to avoid this congestion pricing where they have to shell out $15, they're going to cruise around all these neighborhoods uptown and look for parking on the street. Now, I don't get that, because, you know, if you've ever driven into New York City, parking in the middle of the day it's a challenge. In residential neighborhoods, yeah, you might be able to do it, but generally the residents of those neighborhoods take those spaces. So for you to drive into the city, and I don't know why people do that. Why do you need to drive into the city when there is such good mass transit that can get you anywhere you need to go faster and with less hassle? But okay, you want to drive into the city and you want to save $15. So you're going to risk being late to work to cruise around uptown with everybody else doing the same thing, looking for that elusive parking space on the street. Or failing that, maybe you'll park in a garage. Well, guess what? Parking in a garage is going to cost you more than $15. I don't understand the logic here. There is no logic here. It really doesn't make any sense to me. The opposition to this. Because, you know, the $15 you pay goes towards improving mass transit. And if you don't want to pay the $15, you take mass transit, which is improved by all the people who are paying the $15. It's really not that bad a deal. And is $15 really that much of a deal breaker for so many people? I mean, I can see, you know, lower income people or those relatively few people with food carts that drive into the city with the food carts. Okay, you know, maybe you can make an exception for them. Everybody else, it gets passed along somehow. You only get billed once a day. It's not like every time you go into Manhattan, you're going to have to pay another $15. No, once. That's it. And it's not even $15 around the clock. It's discounted at various times. And there are some exceptions too as well. You know, school buses and things like that.
I think it takes like an adjustment period for people to like figure out ways to make it work for them.
Well, make it work for them. Just respect it. Stop fighting it. It's really ridiculous. Look, this has been happening in London and various other cities throughout the world. It's been a success. Less cars on the street, less pollution, and better mass transit. So, yeah, they're fighting it in Nassau County, I believe. For some reason, New Jersey seems to think they should be completely, I guess, immune from this. I don't know why. What exactly is it that New Jersey, I mean, yeah, you have to pay a toll to come into Manhattan. That's always been the case. So you're used to that. So you also get a deduction for the toll you pay if you're also paying a congestion fee, just like people from Long Island who take the Midtown Tunnel or the Battery Tunnel. So I don't know what's different about New Jersey, but I just wish we'd get past this already, implement the thing, see how it works, and move on from there. All right. Not that big a deal, but everyone's making it a big deal. Okay, we have a lot of serious things to get to, as we tend to do. This whole Daniel Perry case out of Texas, I don't know if people are familiar with this. Basically, this is the guy who murdered a Black Lives Matter protester. Yeah, he was convicted of murder, sentenced to 25 years in prison for killing this guy. And what happened last Thursday, is that Governor Abbott of Texas granted him a full pardon. And this is possibly the most shameless thing I think I've ever seen with regards to the criminal justice system, because it basically just shows how if you're on a particular side of an issue and that issue does not, that side does not align with those in power, you can get executed in this country. That is the message that is being sent here. Because if you look at the facts, you basically look at what happened with this case. You have this guy, Daniel Perry. Now, he's an ex-U.S. Army sergeant. Okay, great. That shouldn't matter at all as far as judging somebody's character. But I have a feeling it did because it keeps getting mentioned. And the guy he killed, too, was also a member of the military. They don't mention that too much. But anyway, he was moonlighting as an Uber driver in Austin. He turned onto a street where demonstrators were marching. He ran a red light. He drove into a crowd. He ran a red light, drove into a crowd of people on the street. This was after posting things online, sending text messages saying, after the protest involving George Floyd, I might go to Dallas to shoot looters. He also sent messages about hunting Muslims and about killing a daughter if she had a crush on a little Negro boy. This is not a nice guy. This is a guy looking for trouble. And according to court documents, he began searching for the locations of Black Lives Matter protests weeks before the shooting. He messaged friends on social media. He compared protesters to a bunch of monkeys flinging an expletive at a zoo. I'm sure you can fill in the words. And again, drove through a red light into a crowd of protesters. Now, this guy, Garrett Foster, one of the protesters, approached the vehicle. And Garrett Foster happened to be carrying a rifle. Now, before you say, oh, well, he was carrying a rifle, he had to be stopped. Remember where we are here. We're in Texas, where that kind of thing is not only legal, it's encouraged. Remember the whole stand your ground thing and everybody's got a right to bear arms and all that? Well, this guy was doing just that, except he was on the other side. He was with the protesters, not with the angry white guys driving Ubers and wanting to run down the monkeys. So what happened? Well, after he drove into the crowd, this guy, Garrett Foster, former U.S. Air Force mechanic, and I guess because he's an Air Force mechanic as opposed to an Army sergeant, his life doesn't matter nearly as much. He's openly carrying an AK-47 semi-automatic assault rifle, something that is legal under Texas law. He approached the car. And according to witnesses, he did not aim his weapon. He did not raise his weapon. But Daniel Perry shot him dead. Right there. Sentenced to 25 years in prison because the evidence was just so overwhelming and compelling. And Governor Greg Abbott on Thursday granted him a full pardon. I want to read you the proclamation, or parts of the proclamation. Whereas Daniel Scott Perry was sentenced in the 147th District Court in Travis County on May 10th, 2023, to 25 years in prison for the offense of murder. Whereas the Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles has conducted an exhaustive review of Daniel Scott Perry's personal history and the facts surrounding his shooting of Garrett Foster. And whereas both the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution and Article 1, Section 23 of the Texas Constitution protect the right to keep and bear arms for, among other things, self-defense. And whereas Texas law, consistent with those constitutional guarantees, provides one of the clearest self-defense protections in the United States. And whereas Texas Penal Code 932A provides that a person is justified in using deadly force against another when that person reasonably believes the deadly force is immediately necessary to protect the person against another's use of unlawful deadly force. And whereas Texas Penal Code 932C provides that a person who is otherwise lawfully present at the location where deadly force is used is not required to retreat before using deadly force. And whereas on July 25th, 2020, Daniel Scott Perry, while driving on a public road in Austin, slowed his vehicle as he rounded a corner onto Congress Avenue and encountered a group of protesters obstructing traffic. Now, you notice what's left out there. What's left out is the fact that he ran through a red light. This has been proven. He ran through a red light. He drove into protesters. But no, according to this proclamation from the governor, he rounded a corner and encountered a group of protesters who were obstructing traffic. So right away, the blame has been transferred over to the protesters. They're the threat, not him, because he never drove through a red light. That's been erased. Whereas Daniel Scott Perry's car was immediately surrounded by aggressive protesters who rushed to obstruct, strike, pound, smash, and kick his vehicle. Well, the crowd was angry when he drove into them. Imagine that. Those barbaric people. Whereas Garrett Foster then approached within 18 inches of Daniel Scott Perry's car, confronted him, and brandished a Kalashnikov-style rifle in the low-ray firing position. A lie. A lie. The governor is making this up. He is twisting what has already been proven in court. Witnesses said he did not raise the gun, did not aim at Daniel Scott Perry. But we're just going to change that so that we have some justification for the murder here. Whereas Daniel Scott Perry fired his handgun at Garrett Foster to eliminate a perceived threat to his safety and called law enforcement less than 1 minute later to inform them of the incident. Actually, I heard he drove away and called them later, but that's not even the most important point here. Whereas Daniel Scott Perry explained to law enforcement at the time that he used his weapon because he feared losing his life and has since consistently stated that he acted in self-defense. Yes, but he was found guilty. People tend to say the same thing over and over again in court. It doesn't make it true. He was found guilty. So the fact that he consistently stated that he acted in self-defense, he can say that for 100 years, but he still was found guilty of murder. Here's where it gets really weird. Whereas Travis County District Attorney Jose Garza, this guy's been brought into the proclamation somehow. The district attorney, rather than upholding the self-defense rights of citizens, has prioritized reducing access to guns that citizens may use to lawfully defend themselves. So now all of a sudden, the district attorney is being targeted by the governor. Whereas District Attorney Garza directed the lead detective investigating Daniel Scott Perry to withhold exculpatory evidence from the grand jury, considering whether to report an indictment. And whereas District Attorney Garza has not sought to see that justice is done, but has instead demonstrated unethical and biased misuse of his office in prosecuting Daniel Scott Perry, whereas the Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles has recommended a full pardon and restoration of full civil rights of citizenship, meaning he can immediately start carrying a gun again. Therefore, I, Greg Abbott, governor of the state of Texas, by virtue of the authority vested in me under the Constitution and laws of this state, and acting upon the recommendation of the Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles, do hereby grant unto the said Daniel Scott Perry a full pardon and restoration of full civil rights of citizenship that may have heretofore been lost as a result of his conviction. And that's that. The life that he took means nothing. Now, this brings forth a whole lot of questions. So this guy runs a red light, drives into a crowd of people. Are you, Governor Abbott, saying that anyone in that crowd could have shot him dead right then on the spot? Oh, no, 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 because they're savages. They're black people in the street. You can't have the same rights as the privileged white guy in the car. No, he was the one who was feeling afraid. And even though there was no imminent threat, he has the right to kill. You can't take that away from him. And anyone who does, you'll be targeted next. That is the country we are living in right now. Oh, sure, it's just Texas. But it's not just Texas. Talk to people. You'll find many, many sympathizers to this guy. Now, something that is a side note to this story is Black Lives Matter protests. The protester was white. Oh, big surprise. Yeah, a lot of white people take part in Black Lives Matter protests. Unfortunately, you know, I feel that if he were not white, we'd be seeing much more of a commotion about this. And that is a failing in the movement. Because it doesn't matter if you're white or black. When something like this happens, it's an injustice, and it needs to be fought. Loud. There should be 10 times as many protests now because of this. I mean, it's basically legalizing murder. Because you have a case where the guy was found guilty, the evidence is there, the witnesses are there, all just erased because the governor says so. Because, you know, he thinks that this guy was better than the other guy, and he was on the right side as opposed to the wrong side. You know, the same thing we're seeing with the pro-Palestinian demonstrations, where if you're on that particular side, you don't have any rights anymore. You're wrong. Whatever happens to you, you deserve. Garrett Foster, the murder victim, his family is speaking out about Governor Abbott's decision to pardon Daniel Perry. Garrett's mother, Sheila, said, "I think they're using my dead child to make a political statement." He was a 28-year-old Air Force veteran when he joined Black Lives Matter protesters in downtown Austin in the summer of 2020, along with his fiancée, Tiffany. Daniel Perry was an Army sergeant who had posted on social media that I might have to kill a few people on my way to work. They are rioting outside my apartment complex. How do you just ignore statements like that? How do you just ignore a history of racist, violent words coming from this guy? Well, when you have power, you can do things like that. He made that post shortly before he ran a red light and drove into the crowd of protesters. Now, as we mentioned, Foster had an assault rifle strapped over his shoulder, was shot and killed when he approached the car driven by Perry, who also had a gun. Travis County jury found Perry guilty of murder, sentenced him to 25 years in prison. Governor Abbott said, "Texas has one of the strongest stand-your-ground laws of self-defense and cannot be nullified by a jury or a progressive district attorney." He's turning this into politics. Progressive district attorney. It was a case of murder. "I will use my constitutional authority to override his leftist policies when needed." Do you see how sick this is becoming? Where no matter what, you can just point to, "You're a leftist, you're a commie," and use that as justification to completely bypass the law. Sheila says the governor's decision puts anyone who legally carries a firearm in Texas at serious risk. Well, not really. Not if you're white and, you know, you've got connections and the person you shoot is on a side that's not particularly popular with the status quo. You'll be all right. Yeah. She says you can shoot somebody if you see their gun and it scares you. That's what he's saying. So basically, you can shoot a cop, all right? Because, hey, that cop has a gun. He might aim it at me and shoot somebody. Explain to me the difference. If you can just shoot a guy in the street because he has a gun and he's not pointing it at you, but you think he might, why can't you shoot a cop for the same reason? Are they not human? Do they not live by the same rules? I mean, this is what it comes to, where you have to lay it out for people so that they realize how crazy this is. When asked what Sheila would tell the governor, she said, "I would ask him what the heck he is thinking and what kind of precedent is he setting in an open carry state. He's saying Garrett deserved to die because he was carrying a gun." Well, I think he's saying Garrett deserved to die because he was with BLM. That's what I think. Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. Yeah, you thought I was going to go overseas to the whole Palestinian issue. Well, yeah, there's still time. There's still time for that. There's plenty to talk about. First of all, let's stay here for a moment because there were violent confrontations again at a pro-Palestinian rally, this time in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, this Saturday. At the rally, which drew hundreds of demonstrators, at least two officers who were wearing the white shirts of commanders. If you've ever seen a crowd of cops, the ones with the white shirts are the ones in control. These white shirt guys were filmed punching three protesters who were prone in the middle of a crosswalk, lying in the middle of a crosswalk, just not doing anything and being punched by these people. One officer had pinned a man to the ground and repeatedly punched him in the ribs. It's a 50-second video clip. Another officer punched the left side of a man's face as he held his head to the asphalt. This is all documented. What are their names? Why aren't we ever told their names? Why aren't they ever disciplined? Why aren't they ever fired? Why aren't they ever prosecuted and put in jail where they belong? Never happens. Cops arrested around 40 people who are unlawfully blocking roadways. Wow, the ultimate offense. What is it about roadways where we feel we can kill people and pummel them and basically kick the crap out of them because they dare to stand in the street? Really? I'm sensing a theme here where people just, they really want their cars to be able to go down a street, whether it's to bypass congestion pricing or to run over Black Lives Matter people or to simply shut up the pro-Palestinian folks. It's sick. Well, the cops and the department's deputy commissioner of operations, Kaz Daughtry, would not comment on the use of force, the documented use of force by cops. Spokesman for Eric Adams also had absolutely nothing to say about it. Now, Bay Ridge, and if you're not familiar, Bay Ridge has a significant Arab American population. They host demonstrations in mid-May every year. Yeah, every year they host demonstrations to commemorate what Palestinians call the Nakba. The Nakba, that's the catastrophe where hundreds of thousands of Palestinians fled or were forced from their homes during the war that led to Israel's founding in 1948. It's fascinating to study. You know, it's not simple, but we all should study what happened in 1948. It wasn't just, oh, yeah, let's start this country called Israel. No, people were displaced. There was a lot of fighting. And it was not smooth by any stretch. And it's important to take this into mind when you're saying anything about what's happening over there. Andrew Gonadez, a state senator, a Democrat who represents the area, said local politicians had been in touch with the commanding officer of the 68th Police Precinct before the pre-planned protest and said there had been no indication that there would be such a heavy police presence. He called the videos he saw of the events deeply disturbing. It certainly seems like the police came ready for a much more aggressive and a much more confrontational demonstration than perhaps they had gotten. This is the kind of gathering that people bring their families to. Like I said, it's an annual event. There was no call for this. But some local residents supported the police, so they were tired of the protest's disruptive impact. Enough is enough, said Peter Scherers, a 40-year resident of Bay Ridge, who said he had viewed the videos. If you're going to break the law, you deserve it. But he's not talking about the cops, of course. He's talking about the people who dare stand in the street. Donna Lieberman, the executive director of the New York Civil Liberties Union, singled out the police department's strategic response group. Their handling of the demonstration was a violation of New Yorkers' rights to speak out and risks chilling political expression, she said. NYCLU protest monitors witnessed violent arrests, protester injuries, and even arrests of credentialed members of the press. The continual pattern of NYPD aggression against pro-Palestinian demonstrators raises important questions about the city's disparate treatment of speakers based on their message. Absolutely disgusting. Let's move closer. Stony Brook. Yeah, we have some updates. 19 pro-Palestinian protesters from Stony Brook University were arraigned yesterday as authorities pushed ahead with the cases, despite a plea from the school's faculty senate to dismiss the charges of disorderly conduct. Hey, if there was any disorderly conduct, it was on the part of the cops and the administration for moving in on peaceful demonstrators when they could have easily reached a better settlement. A professor who was arrested said some students had indications there were attempts to access their cell phones while those cell phones were in the possession of Stony Brook University's campus police for more than a week. The professor said the students were never shown a search warrant authorizing police to seize or search the devices. And I can tell you why. They didn't get a search warrant. They illegally took your phones. And then they tried to illegally access your phones. And boy, do you guys have a lawsuit on your hands. Appearing in Suffolk District Court in Central Islip for the first time since their May 1st arrest, the students and their supporters sat in the back of the courtroom, some draping the black and white Palestinian scarf called a kafaya around their shoulders. One by one, they were summoned before Judge Bernard Cheng to hear the charges leveled against them, all low-level violations. Big waste of time. Prosecutors told the judge there were 150 police officers at the protest, and they had voluminous evidence they needed time to compile, including videos and photographs and attempts to get illegal searches of phones. One parent, Iman Kazmi, told Newsday he was there with his son, Zach, who had just graduated from Stony Brook. I'm proud of him, and I'm here to support him. A total of 29 people were arrested after university officials told them they had to move their demonstration to another site. They weren't even saying they had to leave. Just move. They got that upset over the fact that the protesters wouldn't move somewhere else. Look, I've been to a lot of protests, and the whole way it works is you go somewhere to protest. And if somebody says, you know what, could you just take your protest and go over there instead, you know, a bunch of blocks away, maybe a different city or something like that. Yeah, it's not really how it is. I mean, come on, Stony Brook, you should know that. There's been enough protests on campus. Yeah, it's inconvenient, no question. But it's happening. Maybe the group that had the place reserved after them, maybe they could move someplace else. I know it's not fair, but that's what this whole thing is about. The lack of fairness. David Gray, who is an attorney representing the students, said it appears authorities are intending to prepare to take this case to trial. There was no movement to dismiss. There was no indication they wanted to resolve this matter in a reasonable way, in my judgment. Well, okay, going to go to trial then. A lot of publicity, a lot of negativity. If that's what it takes, then that's what it takes. Faculty Senate passed a resolution last week calling for the, actually May 6th, calling for the university to request that the charges be dropped. Last week, it narrowly rejected another resolution censuring Stony Brook President Maureen McGinnis for her handling of the protests and arrests. 10 of the protesters were held for 7.5 hours at the campus police headquarters after their arrests, during which their phones were seized by campus police. The remaining 19 were taken to a state police barracks in Riverhead, and there 7 more phones were taken. The university returned the last one late last week before graduation on Friday. Josh Dubna, one of the professors arrested, said on Monday it appears the phones were accessed while being held by campus police. Gray said if authorities seized or accessed the phones without a search warrant, it would violate Fourth Amendment protections against unreasonable seizures and searches. According to Dumnal, while the phones were with the campus police, 2 protesters received notifications from Apple stating that someone had logged into their iCloud accounts from an unrecognized device. The message said that it wasn't them logging in. If it wasn't them logging in, they should change their password. Good advice. Another phone that a student reported to Apple as lost was then found, even though the student did not have the phone. This can happen only if someone logs onto the iCloud account and marks it as found. Yeah, these cops are not the brightest bulbs in the bunch, are they? Other students and Dubnow could see through the iCloud that their phones were being charged while at the campus police headquarters. GPS on the phones gave the location. Meanwhile, Stony Brook says nothing was seized without the appropriate steps, including the application for and receipt of a search warrant where applicable. I think everybody would love to see that search warrant because it hasn't shown up yet. Yeah, so that's pretty disgusting. Next court date is mid-June. We'll be following that. And, of course, the big news. What I consider the good news. Netanyahu is a wanted man. Yeah, the International Criminal Court is seeking his arrest, along with leaders of Hamas. And honestly, I hope they share a cell together, because they're each horrible, evil people. And what Netanyahu has done, it baffles my comprehension that anyone could be so inhumane. Well, actually, you know what? I'm not surprised anymore. You know, the Iranian president was killed this past week in a helicopter crash. Looking at his history, known as the Butcher of Tehran, somebody who basically had all kinds of people executed for daring to protest. You have the horrors of what Hamas has done, not just on October 7th, but throughout. You have all kinds of people, Vladimir Putin, for instance, dictators all over the world, think nothing of mass murder. And it is mass murder to decimate a nation, to decimate a community, which is what has been happening since October 7th. Look, let's put this in perspective, okay? You guys remember Ukraine being invaded by Russia? Yeah? We're still talking about that? Okay, good. That happened over 2 years ago. I think 27 months. In that time, in that 27 months, and keep in mind, Russia has been thoroughly condemned globally for their horrible actions. In that 27 months, 10,000 civilians have lost their lives. 10,000 civilians in 27 months. It's been 7 months since October 7th, and 35,000 people have lost their lives in Gaza. 3.5 times the amount in a fraction of the time. A population that is far less than the population of Ukraine. Maybe that is why people are so upset. It's not anti-Semitism. It's basic human rights. Is there anti-Semitism? Sure, there's anti-Semitism. It's existed forever. It's a cancer. But you don't fight it by accusing everybody who calls you out for crimes against humanity as being anti-Semitic. And that is what Netanyahu is responding with, that his indictment, the arrest warrants being issued for him, is another example of anti-Semitism. It's a crutch that he and his ilk just continually use without any evidence whatsoever, just the fact that, yeah, they hate Israel, they hate that we defend ourselves. No, nobody, well, I mean, there are evil people out there, no question about it, but what we're talking about here, people aren't saying that Israel does not have the right to defend itself, just that this no longer meets the definition of defending yourself. This is a massive slaughter. This is a crime against humanity, and you damn well belong in the International Criminal Court. Now, our United States Senate apparently wants to take action against the International Criminal Court. You guys realize how bad that makes you look to the rest of the world? I mean, you have France, you have Belgium, you have all kinds of countries that are saying they support what ICC is doing. Because you need to have justice. We had no problem with this when it was Milosevic from the former Yugoslavia being hauled before the ICC, or when it's various dictators from African countries, or, you know, anyone but us, because somehow we're incapable of ever violating the law. It's like we're a nation of cops, you know? We can abuse, we can get away with anything, but we don't have to answer for our actions. A nation of cops, United States, Israel, they both seem to think that the law doesn't apply to them. And when things go against either regime, we can just point fingers and say they're corrupt, they're anti-Semitic, they're part of this global conspiracy. Look, sometimes the law is on your side, sometimes the law is against you. And most of the time, it's because of your actions. So, fighting ICC is not the answer here. You can debate, you know, is this legitimate? The thing I'm hearing in the coverage of this is that they're most upset that there's some kind of equivalency being drawn here, because they're issuing arrest warrants for Hamas leaders and Israeli leaders at the same time. And apparently their conclusion is that means they're one and the same. No, it means that it's the same conflict. The same thing happened in Bosnia. Muslim leaders and Serbian leaders indicted at the same time. It's the same conflict. And that's not even the point. Thing is, you know, looking at all the coverage that we've seen over the years, or over, in this particular case, over the months, everybody who criticizes or condemns is accused of being anti-Semitic. And, you know, I'm always listening to the evidence. And the evidence is always, they're saying a phrase that's a code. Look, I guarantee you, if there are people who are anti-Semitic in the crowds of pro-Palestinian demonstrators, they are too stupid to speak in code. All right? People that are that filled with hatred and are calling for the complete annihilation of Israel, they're not going to phrase it in a way that you have to piece it together or solve. They're going to say it straight out. And there are plenty of people like that. Yes, too many. But they are not the majority of that crowd. And all you have to do is talk to them. All you have to do is listen. You know, I see coverage. I see live feeds of these things. Not seeing the anti-Semitism that people are accusing them of. Look, anti-Semitism? How about this? In Brooklyn, two young Hasidic boys attacked without any warning in Brooklyn earlier this week. There's video of this. There's video of a guy getting off a bicycle 9 p.m. Sunday between Willoughby and Myrtle Avenues. and basically viciously assaulting one of the kids. They were aged 11 and 13, kicking and hitting them repeatedly. They're looking into maybe if that's a hate crime. That is anti-Semitism, folks. Don't look into it. That's real. For some reason, this story is not getting attention. Why is that? The blatant, obvious attacks, of which there are plenty, they get ignored. And the ones that benefit corrupt leaders who don't give a crap about the people that they are killing, those are the ones that get all the attention. I get to abuse the justice system and everything else. Look, there is so much going on with this conflict that's disturbing. And one of the more disturbing things is the way that the far right in this country is just blindly supporting whatever Israel decides to do. You might wonder, why is that? I mean, these are evangelicals. Why do they support Jews, of all things? Well, they don't really love the Holy Land like you might think they do. For many what they call Christian Zionists, their support for Israel is rooted in its role in the supposed end times. You know, Jesus comes back to earth, there's a bloody final battle, Armageddon, and Jesus rules the world from the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. And when that happens, non-believers, and that includes Jews and Muslims, do not survive. I mean, they're not exactly hiding this. That is where the support comes from, the prophecy. They don't give a rat's ass about the religion, about the people. No, it's about their fundamentalist prophecy. Oh, and here's another fun little bit of news. We told you about Al Jazeera being shut down in Israel because, I guess, having different perspectives is inconvenient now. And freedom of the press is no longer something valued by that regime. Well, they've gone a step further now. Now the Associated Press has been targeted. Israeli authorities have seized a camera and broadcasting equipment belonging to the U.S. news agency, shutting down its live feed of Gaza. I was watching that. I was watching the live feed of Gaza from the Associated Press. It's on YouTube. Was on YouTube. AP's Vice President Lauren Easton said it decries in the strongest terms the actions of the Israeli government. Israel's communications ministry said the equipment was confiscated because it was violating a new media law by providing images for broadcasts that Al Jazeera was using. Oh yeah, so if you in any way help Al Jazeera, a channel which really I think everyone should at least take a look at before they judge, and they have a live feed on YouTube. You can judge for yourself. It's in English. And as you may know, Israel shut down Al Jazeera, accusing him of being a Hamas mouthpiece. As somebody who watches them, I can say that's ridiculous. They have different perspectives. Sometimes they get it right, sometimes they get it wrong. But in a time like this, you need those perspectives. All right, I have talked all through the hour. I'm sorry, Kyle, you've been stuck over there the whole time.
Yeah, on the edge of my seat, but I would just say it's on us to simply move forward and move ahead and do it quickly, faster even than some of these sort of made up divisive perspectives, because the world really needs sort of less violence and a little bit more moving on.
Wouldn't that be nice? Hey, you can write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. Agree, disagree, whatever. Let's have a dialogue. Stay tuned to USB. We'll see you next week. Good night. Oh, yeah, and call out the hypocrites whenever you see them. They're everywhere. Do it in vain. 'Cause
see them walk through the same store. Hypocrite, where will you run to now? Hypocrite, you will get hurt somehow. Hypocrite, I know that time will tell on you.
What to expect when you're expecting a teenager. Learning the lingo.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying, totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous, as in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.